Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. My name is Marty Bennett, President of Social Media and International Education Consulting, and I welcome you here to this weekly attempt to round up three of the top news stories in our profession, international education and social media, and we look forward to discussing those with you today. As in each week when we conduct these live chats here on Facebook, we want to take the time to go through a little bit more in depth than you can typically do on a regular Facebook post, and get into some of the content in these articles and news stories about how international education is changing as a profession, how technology and social media can inform a lot of what we do in international education. So that's what we'll be doing over the next half hour or so on our social media and international education websites on us on Facebook Live here. So thanks for coming. And what we'll do today in the first topic that we're covering is actually a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and that revolves around data, using data in international education. So what I'd like to do to start, and I appreciate you all hanging with me today, is to cover one of the topics that really is central to what I think institutions that are successful long-term build their enrollment strategies on, and that is using data effectively in their international student enrollment marketing decisions. And what I'd like to do, and as I go through these three articles today, first one obviously deals with the data data content that is so important, I think, for international educators to have a good sense on. And as I go through each of these articles, I'll post the links to them in the comments section on the Facebook page. I've just posted the link to the first one, and that's an article I wrote last week for Hot Courses, one of my consulting opportunities. And that's for Hot Courses Group. I've been doing a number of different series since I came on board with them a year ago. And this series is the kickoff, this article is the kickoff of a new series on big data, small data, making informed international student enrollment management decisions. So it's not just about the recruitment piece, it's about enrollment management on the international education side. So that's what the article really focuses on, is really talking about this first section, first of a three-part series, focuses on institutional data that can often go overlooked by colleges and universities in international admissions offices as they put together recruitment strategies for the markets that are most important to them. So, and even identifying what markets are most important to them. They may know that intuitively or have anecdotal evidence to back that up, but certainly what this article focuses on is really about utilizing the data that you have on your own campus first, as you put together an analysis of what makes sense for your individual institution. And in the article, really it's comparing what we do in international education, particularly international student recruitment and admissions, to all the available data that we have around us, but we have so little time to process it. And it's like being adrift in an ocean and needing water. And that's, but not able to drink any of it. And that's really the piece that I wanted to spend time on with a review of this article in terms of looking at what the priorities should be as you're taking those building blocks of information about your own students, your own existing international students, to put together a coherent and strategic long-term plan to build your international student populations. And I start with knowing your students. Obviously, that seems like a no-brainer, but really the reality is how much information do you have as an international admissions office related to your current international students, recent graduates, that type of thing? And how well are you tracking those students from their initial inquiry through to the time that they become alumni? And that's the piece that I think once you go into an international student recruitment or enrollment management process, when you're building plans, is knowing what your messaging is and how well it's being received. So I break down the categories of what students are thinking, current students are thinking, into three categories in terms of data mining opportunities for institutions. First is in the perspective to enrolling student information, then online digital media effectiveness, and then post-enrollment student attitudes. So there are different ways that institutions can and have been using these data points to really assess how they're doing in the effectiveness of their messaging. And I'll run through those fairly quickly. The article will go in depth into what those are, but you can look at something that domestic admissions offices have been doing for years, and there may be some of this going on, particularly if you're in domestic operation, is having a non-enrolling student survey and finding out by sending out to your students who did not enroll, either did not deposit or did not come to your institution, who you had issued documents to, particularly I-20s, finding out why they decided not to come. Was it a visa denial, financially, having a better offer financially, family concerns, whatever it might be. Another, and one that I've used very successfully over the years, is having new student focus groups, where you're capturing students shortly after they've arrived on campus. These are the ones who've made that commitment to come the thousands and thousands of miles to you, to invest the thousands and thousands of dollars in their education at your institution. And these are the ones that are bought into your messaging. But they can also provide you some insights into things that maybe didn't make sense or might need refining as you look to develop your message further. So capturing that enthusiasm and that intensity in the initial stages of enrollment for these students, when they first get on your campus, when they're really excited, they can't wait to get going with their new life in the United States. So you're helping them, and that this focus group, giving pizza as it always works out, or whatever food you choose to bring students in. Free food always gets students in, and adults and other adults, no matter what age you are. But certainly that's something to consider, doing these kind of focus groups for your new students immediately after they arrive, and assessing them, having them assess your various parts of your communication plan, what they focused on most as they made their decisions to come to your institution. What they felt about your social media presence, your website, any search profiles that they reviewed of yours before they enrolled. So it's a good way to really take advantage of that opportunity to get your current students' input about how you're doing currently, and helping that inform future initiatives that you might pursue. Part of that assessment it also extends to that some of the concerns you might get from those initial focus groups or from the why they didn't come might have something to do with something they saw online. And that's a time in every international admissions person's life where you're hoping that what you have online is an accurate reflection of what the reality is for your students once they get there. So. Part of it is you're going to get some data from the students that you're interviewing, but are you really taking advantage of all the different pieces that you have through a regular review of your Google Analytics, checking out your keywords, meta tags, your search functionality on your site, the landing pages or events that you do, are they appropriate and active? Where is your traffic coming from? On your social media strategy, how frequently are you reviewing your analytics from those sources? Do you run ad campaigns, and how are you refining your ad campaigns? On your communication flow, your messaging out to your prospective students, do you segment your messaging? Do you have just one size fits all, other than maybe country or major? How do you define that? Obviously, you need a good CRM to do that effectively. Are you moving towards that? Are you checking click-through rates on the messaging you are sending out to see what might be needing? Are you doing A/B testing for messages to see what might work so that can inform future initiatives you do? The final piece of student information you need to look at is your institutional efforts that extend beyond your admission office and student services office that speak to retention and alumni success. What kind of ongoing retention efforts are there at your institution that involve your international students? What is the alumni office doing when students are graduating each year, each semester? Are they doing exit interviews? Are they being asked about international student-related issues? So those are some great student-focused data that you can look at to help inform future operations. But also you want to look at your internal operations as an institution, your own communication plan through your international student recruitment operations. What about your orientation programming can be adjusted from surveys you do to students after they've gone through? What about residence life procedures? Do any of those need a looking at? So there's some real interesting pieces in data that you can get from your own students and residence life and career services. What are they doing for international students? And these data-informed changes are some of the particularly that impact offices outside your own are ones obviously you need to have a solid base of support on campus to do. So hopefully you have a supportive boss that can help make those decisions and move those decisions forward at the appropriate levels. But if one thing in the end is, I've had bosses who have done this before that they say, hey, it's all about ROI. How much revenue are you bringing into the institution? We'll look at that in a cost-benefit analysis and see how much it costs you to bring in a student, what that student net benefit is to the university. So those kind of models can be very useful in terms of informing ROI decisions. You might need to be making changes to your recruitment strategies based on external environmental factors like Saudi scholarships going away, Brazilian scientific mobility students going away, other new opportunities coming up in Mongolia that might be a scholarship group of students you might be able to attract. So these are things that you want to pay attention to in your internal reviews. And I think that there's more on the data side that should go into recruitment planning, particularly when it comes to analyzing what markets you need to be in, that type of thing. So that's what I'll be discussing in next month's late October's blog article for Hot Courses Group, and that'll be focusing on the survey data that's out there for student preferences and student behavior in terms of where they go, where they spend their time, what they're concerned about in their college searches. So keep an eye out for that one in about 2 to 3 weeks on the Hot Courses group site. The second article that I think goes in line with some of what I'm talking about with the data is a more general admissions related topic, actually an article a sponsored article at Higher Ed Live on why new tech is needed to help colleges meet enrollment goals. And this one is something that, even though it's a sponsored article on Higher Ed Live, it does focus attention on something I think a lot of institutions do miss. And that is that institutions, and this is not the part that they miss, institutions are not making their classes, certainly not making their classes by May 1, and as we talked about last week, June 1 or July 1 might be more appropriate dates by which institutions have a good sense of whether they're going to make their class each year now. So what this article focuses on, because colleges are not making their classes, hitting their numbers by the time that they need to, the question is, okay, why aren't they making it? And does part of that involve some of the practices that institutions have been using to recruit students? Part of it is the declining use of snail mail or printed material in the college admissions process, particularly at the search stage, where students now are basically shying away from that. Students right now are not looking for the printed material. They're looking for the digital content. Part of this article, I think, provides some valuable insight into the costs, as we were just talking about with the data informing ROI decisions for international students. The article points to a 2018 Ruffalo Levitz report Where the average expenditure per student in 2017 for four-year colleges or universities was slightly under $2,400 per student. The cost, if you're looking to bring in a class of 1,000 students, that's going to cost you $2.4 million. The number for public universities on a per-student basis was significantly lower at $536 per student. For a larger state school to spend to recruit a class of 2,500 students, they'd still have to spend $1.3 million. So there's a lot of information and costs that are involved in the production and mailing of pieces that have gone out to students. Domestically, that's more of an issue than perhaps internationally, where maybe many international offices have kind of moved away from still mailing initial prospectuses and packages and search materials to prospects overseas. These are the names they get through tests from TOEFL or IELTS or SAT, whatever it might be. So I think that's a piece that really is important in looking at how you, as an international office, how you design your strategies and your, particularly at the search stage, but even throughout the admissions funnel, what are you doing digitally to help attract students and meet students where they are. And for me, my main focus in everything I've done on the consulting side since I joined Education USA in 2008 through to today is living where your audience lives. And that means your institution has to have a presence where your prospective students are. And if you know anything about Gen Z, that's the generation of students that we're now recruiting as institutions, is that they are mobile first. They are the first truly 100% digital native generation. Cell phone and direct mail, internet phone calls and direct mail are not the most effective tactic with this demographic. Recent survey of Gen Z college age students showed that only 13% wanted brands to communicate with them by mail. Why? Because they digital age students digest content in a much different way than even the millennials and Generation Y or previous generations had. So Generation Z, they're the first neo-digital natives, as the article refers to. So they, on average, they are spending huge chunks of time on messaging apps each day, 3+ hours on 52% of teens using messaging apps, 3+ hours a day, with 150 interactions per day on messaging apps. And they prefer their content served up digitally via social media, 34%, email, 33%, and digital ads, 28%. So that's where they prefer getting their content. Are you using those three, social media, email, digital? You're probably using at least two of those, hopefully, and maybe looking at the digital side in terms of ads and how is that improving what you do. So the traditional recruitment approach for colleges and universities typically is there's a big disconnect happening in terms of investment on, they know their no students' test scores. They know where they're located, they know maybe their ethnicity and not other non-relevant pieces of data, and they're picking up names from students they think are a good fit based on that data. Then they start sending emails, snail mail, and even digital banner ads. But the problem is it's not a personalized decision, personalized information that's being sent typically. So mostly that gets tuned out. So what is a solution here? And the article goes on to make the case for mobile apps that are a real effective tool to reach that generation and it's sponsoring their own app. But for me, the point of the article is really showing that students and the way they digest content is very different. So it's very important for institutions to make sure that their approaches are ones that adjust for the current needs of their students, and their students don't want, prospective students don't want snail mail. Prospective students don't want to be talked to as if they're, you know, dear John and Sally, John or Sally. They want to have a message that's personalized to them and their content to be personalized to them. So for many institutions, that seems like an impossible task. So how do you make that happen? And that's the real rub of making it a much more personal approach, a much more individualized approach, where the content that you're relaying to prospective student audiences is much more focused to their specific needs and wants. The emails that you do send, if the more customized you can get, the more segmented your approach can get once you know key information about students, about major, about country of origin, other things that may be helpful in terms of matching students with potential programs on your campus, with other current students on your campus, groups on your campus that they would benefit from. That's the kind of information when you can do more of that with your prospective student audience, you're putting your institution certainly a leg up. So the more tech savvy your office is, your campus is in terms of their overall approach through the marketing communication office, hopefully you have resources there to help support what you do. Then I think the better prepared you're going to be to make a good case about for your institution to prospective students. So that's a good article there, to just as a useful reminder to how important technology is becoming in reaching the current Generation Z, the first truly digital natives. Now that's the second main focus I wanted to have today. A third is on a topic we've covered before, and that's STEM students and international STEM students. But the article I'm bringing up now is actually from University World News, and it's they feature commentaries from around the world, and this one in particular is from Sweden, an author in Sweden, talking about the tremendous gap that they have in that country. And the quote from one of the authors here is, "Since the first half of the 1990s, the deficit between demand and supply in the workforce has widened, and over recent years reached levels that have never before been recorded." And they've experienced a huge growth in the number of students over the last 20 years. There's an unsatisfied demand for engineers and IT in Sweden, for example. I know we've talked in the past about, why are you talking about Sweden? Well, the reason why I focus on Sweden here is this article, I think, does a good job of sharing the struggles that many Western nations have in their job forces, meeting the needs of their country. In the IT fields, in the science and technology fields, engineering fields especially. And that's something that in Sweden they have, they specifically recruited 31,000 students in 2015 to STEM education in Sweden. And that was about 29% of all the students that were admitted. In Germany, the corresponding figure was 39%. So the challenges for Sweden, they have a lower proportion of international students at levels compared to more like Belgium and Switzerland and Austria. When the tuition fees were introduced in 2011 for international students from outside the EU, their numbers dropped again. So we're seeing in Sweden, they just have some challenges there, and the article goes on to talk about what are some of the ways that they can be improving what they do in terms of trying to recruit the STEM students to come to Sweden. So we know in the United States that international students make up a huge proportion of engineering, science fields, at our institutions, particularly at the graduate level, and evidence is quite clear that there are graduate programs that would, if international students went away or got reduced significantly, would have to shut down because they are sustained by international students. And I think that's a real challenge for institutions grappling with that, because they don't have the U.S. students to fill the seats, so they become dependent on them. And in the workforce, you're seeing that too. Even despite what the current administration's tact has been on, or lack thereof, related to STEM and international students through OPT, their views on STEM OPT rules and the changes that the tightening of regulations there, then looking at the next level with H-1B, looking at obviously the lion's share of H-1B lottery recipients over the last decade or two have come from India. They've been very active companies in India, and as well as Indian students here looking to continue on into the workplace here in the United States. They have cornered the market almost on STEM programs, STEM jobs. And now this administration is certainly taking a very different view of what these students can mean for for the nation. These highly skilled individuals, they're looking to bump up the minimum wage, starting wage for those students beyond what normally is considered entry level, and for H-1B. So it's really a challenge moving forward as a country that we're not the that does misery love company. Yes, it does in some cases, and certainly when it comes to the job markets, where governments look at the larger mega trends on employment and where the gaps are. Certainly STEM is one of those, in the sciences and medical fields. Those are significant gaps that we have that are currently being filled largely by international students. And I think the numbers of the most recent Open Doors data had close to 44% of international students in the United States as of the 2017 Open Doors numbers were STEM students. So they make up a huge percentage of our international student population. So it's really really a critical time for the United States and a lot of countries around the world that are looking at their current job markets and looking at the higher ed system to help meet those needs. Of the challenges through government restrictions that may be going away, the opportunities for many of these students to continue. So it's really a critical time for not just the U.S. on STEM, but countries around the world that are Western countries especially, that are looking to fill the gaps in their employment structures. So interesting to see that. So that's the last of the articles I had for today. But I do want to leave you with a couple of things. For those of you who have been following these midweek roundups for a while, you may remember that we recently relaunched our SMIE consulting website, and popping that up here on the screen for you now, so you can when you see it, and I'll be popping the link to that in the comments section here on the Facebook page. The website is really a long overdue overhaul for the site. And it gives a lot of great resources, free resources to institutions and colleagues that are looking to get some data on what's going on, some presentations I've done in the past on relevant topics to social media, international ed, as well as a list of the services we provide, blogs that I've written, articles I've written, the archive of those is available there. You can also subscribe to a new weekly newsletter that I have coming out every Monday morning direct to your inbox. You're welcome to visit the site and subscribe to that there. And also, if you'd like to catch past editions of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup, there's also a playlist on our new YouTube channel that you're welcome to check out as well. That will give you all of these since mid-July when we first started doing these midweek roundups, some of the summations of some of the insight I've had into some of the key issues of the day. Next week, one of the issues we'll certainly be covering is the allegation or the release this past week of almost made it into this week's show, but we'll definitely get it in next week on how China. That the members of the administration were seriously considering banning all Chinese students from international study here, and that anyone who's been in the business more than a minute knows that that would be just a complete body blow and knockout blow to the international ed market here in the United States if that were to ever happen, with 300,000 plus Chinese students having to leave. That's not happening, thankfully, but you never know with this administration. So I want to certainly, we'll cover that one a little bit more in depth next week, but certainly thanks again for joining us today, and we definitely look forward to connecting with you again next week. Take care.